When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Strangers, I am so overwhelmed by the outpouring of support after last week's Ask Me Anything episode. I heard from so many of you, some of whom I've chatted with before, and some of whom have been listening for a long time, but never reached out before. I am honestly so touched and buoyed. Thank you for sharing your own stories of grief. Thank you for the encouragement. And thank you for all the advice about my chronic fatigue. Please feel free to leave a review wherever you listen and share with your friends. The podcasting industry has changed a lot in the last couple of years. And with Wondery, a $40 million podcasting company owned by Amazon, shutting down, it feels like the future for a lot of us is uncertain. So your support literally helps keep the show going. Also, Strange and Unexplained and the podcasting network I co-own, Grab Bag Collab, will be moving from Patreon to supporting cast in the next few weeks. If you're interested in getting early and ad-free Strange, you'll be able to do that for just $4 a month. If you want Strange, plus my advice podcast, Dear Daisy, a member-exclusive show, plus early and ad-free Crimes of the Centuries from Pulitzer Prize winner Amber Hunt, plus early and ad-free Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, my Love is Blind recap podcast with Broadway star Ellen Marsh, and more, it's only $8 a month. Honestly, it's probably the best deal you can get for $8 anywhere. So stay tuned for more information about supporting cast. We're hoping to have that up and running in the next few weeks. And thanks so much for all your support. What is it about some places that inspire such awe and wonder? Do we place spiritual importance on gorgeous vistas like the desert landscapes of the Southwest or the various sweeping mountains that dot our continent, because they are actually hotspots of spiritual or otherworldly phenomenon, or simply because their beauty is so unspeakable, so hard to contain in our simple minds, that we believe they are imbued with spiritual significance? Can a mountain contain magic? Or do we bring the magic to the mountain? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I would rather climb a molehill than a mountain, and prefer to seek my spirituality in the company of witchy folk, tarot cards, and, with any luck, a glass of wine. But I get how sometimes nature is just so awe-inspiring that it can make you want to become one with it. And with all the incredible natural wonders in the world, it's curious when one emerges as somehow extra inspiring. So today, let's consult the pendulum and grab our wampum as we climb to new heights of enlightenment in the vast beauty that is Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta is located at the southern end of the Cascade Range, about 60 miles north of Redding, California, in the Shasta Trinity National Forest. The area is a bastion of beauty, sitting right in the middle of the very green Pacific Northwest, just 3 hours' drive from the moody Pacific Coast and the Humboldt Redwood State Park. So, with all of that incredible natural beauty and dynamic geology, a 14,179-foot stratovolcano rising dramatically to the east seems right at home. Shasta is visible for more than 100 miles on a clear day, which means you can spend a day listening to the waves crash and never take your eyes off your destination as you drive through the wilderness toward it. Mount Shasta is the second highest peak in the Cascades, the first being Mount Rainier in Washington, which is also very beautiful, though it looks less like a formidable geological giant and more like a giant powdered muffin, which is fine. Who doesn't love a muffin? Besides my friend Liz, who gets inexplicably wrathful when she sees one. Anyway, Mount Shasta is also the fifth highest mountain in the state of California, and according to Elizabeth and William Orr in their riveting 1996 book, Geology of the Pacific Northwest, quote, has an estimated volume of 85 cubic miles, which makes it the most voluminous stratovolcano in the Cascade Volcanic Arc, end quote. And you thought you were fancy. Let me break down that description some and give you a better visual. The Encyclopedia Britannica describes a stratovolcano as a, quote, landform characterized by a conical shape formed by layers of volcanic material deposited during successive volcanic eruptions. Stratovolcanoes tend to slope gently at the base but rise quickly near the summit to form tall mountain peaks. They are often part of large volcanically active regions. There are more than 700 known volcanoes classified as stratovolcanoes, many more than any other volcanic formation. Several are among the best known volcanoes because of their striking appearance and their notoriety for some of the most spectacular eruptions in history. End quote. Basically, it's the cool-looking volcano by which we judge all other volcanoes and by which we model our science fair volcanoes. And it is super huge. If one cubic mile means a mile deep, a mile wide, and a mile long, and Shasta is 85 of those, well, that's a whole lot of mountain and volcano, you know? So Mount Shasta is impressive. But she's not just a pretty face, stranger. No, she is smart and deep, too, metaphorically as well as physically. Shasta is a wonder of geology and humbling in size and beauty. But she is also a major cultural and spiritual landmark. The mountain's magnetism has long inspired awe. Naturalist John Muir captured its almost intoxicating presence when he wrote in The Life and Letters of John Muir, quote, "When I first caught sight of it, over the braided folds of the Sacramento Valley, I was 50 miles away and afoot, alone and weary, yet all my blood turned to wine, and I have not been weary since," end quote. Listen, I'm going to be honest, all of these old-timey passages where people say they were fortified by wine or mead, come, we shall drink of this wine and be fortified. Who gets fortified by alcohol? I just get tired. I will drink of this wine and take a nap. If all my blood were turned to wine, I would be asleep in seconds. Anyway. Indigenous people in the northwest region where Mount Shasta stands, including the Akamawi, Otsegewi, Karuk, Klamath, Modoc, Shasta, Akwenuchu, Wintu, and Yana people have revered the mountain in their traditions for many generations. Mount Shasta is known to the Karuk as Uyataku, or White Mountain, and has long been thought of as hallowed ground. According to ShastaScenes.com, quote, "Mount Shasta is sacred, holding immense spiritual and cultural importance, and is seen as the center of the universe, which is home to their creator. For example, the Klamath believe that Skell, the spirit of the above world, famous for his battle with Lao, the spirit of the below world, resides in the mountain," end quote. This mythical confrontation between Skell and Lao is described in elemental terms, a battle of fire and stone, where each spirit hurled hot rocks and flames at the other across the vast Oregon landscape. The myth portrays Mount Shasta as a cosmic stronghold of order and skyborn power, while Mount Mazama represents the shadowy underworld. When Lao attacked the Klamath people after being rejected by a human woman, the Klamath pleaded with Skell for help. He descended from Mount Shasta to intervene, embodying divine protection, and ultimately triumphed over Lao, aided by the sacrificial bravery of two Klamath medicine men who threw themselves into the fiery crater to end the destruction. The story goes that Skell then caused the top of Mount Mazama to collapse inward, imprisoning Lao and forming Crater Lake. In this cosmology, Mount Shasta stands as the sacred source of light, law, and cosmic equilibrium, a divine mountain that anchors the Klamath world. In Running the Salmon Home, Lifeways and Waters of the Winneman Wintu, the Winneman Wintu chief Colleen Sisk emphasizes her people's bond with Shasta, saying, quote, "We came out of that mountain, so we're obligated to be the watchers of the mountain," end quote. In the Winneman Wintu creation story, a sacred spring on Mount Shasta, known to them as Bulyum Puyuk, is the birthplace of humanity. A note on pronunciations, just so you know, there is literally nothing on the internet to help me figure out how to pronounce that, so I'm doing my best. The first people are said to have emerged from this spring, helpless and unable to speak, until the salmon took pity on them and offered their voice, in exchange for which the people promised to always speak on behalf of the salmon. To this day, the Wintu and other bands perform ceremonies on Mount Shasta and consider it the sacred center of the universe. Mount Shasta's impact on tribal lore is obviously extremely significant, and the mountain's cultural history and spiritual reputation endure today, even outside of the native populations that are so linked to the mountain's history. Maybe this continued resonance is because of Shasta's deep native ancestral connection, or maybe it's because of its inspiring beauty, or maybe it's because white people got interested in it. Strangers, Ollie is back. My dogs, Pops and Noodle, love their food from Ollie. Ollie offers fresh, protein-packed meals made with real, human-grade ingredients, a win for my dog's health. And they offer 5 tasty recipes, all slow-cooked for top nutrition, a win for my dog's happiness. With Ollie, my dogs are so excited for mealtime, and I've noticed they both have more energy. Just head to ollie.com/strange, tell them about your dog, any allergies or dislikes, what your goals are, weight loss, shinier coat, more energy, and Ollie prepares tailored meal plans to meet your dog's specific needs, with perfectly portioned meals in mess-free packaging and a storage puptainer for zero freeze stink, Ollie is a no-brainer. Your dog's well-being starts with their food. And that's why Ollie delivers fresh, human-grade food that your dog will love. Head to ollie.com/strange, tell them all about your dog, and use code STRANGE to get 60% off your welcome kit when you subscribe today. Plus, they offer a happiness guarantee on the first box, so if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. That's OLLIE.com/strange and enter code STRANGE to get 60% off your first box. Mount Shasta, in more recent history, has been embraced by New Age seekers and contemporary mystics. Present-day occultists and spiritual types also view the region as the site of powerful energy vortices. Some modern spiritualists believe the mountain and its surrounding areas to be the home of ascended spiritual masters, and alternative esoteric believers embrace the area as a hub for UFO activity. Because of course they do! It seems that the white man's interest in Mount Shasta took hold somewhere in the late 1800s. In 1886, writer Frederick Spencer Oliver was just 18 years old when he completed a work of spiritual fiction called A Dweller on Two Planets, or A Dividing of the Way. He claimed the book's true author was a non-corporeal entity named Philos the Thibetan, and that he had more or less just channeled the novel. The book was published posthumously in 1905 and became one source of popular legends about the Mount Shasta area, containing stories about a mystical brotherhood of devotees of the Buddha who tended the flame of purity in a rumored mystic temple inside the mountain. Mount Shasta, according to Oliver's book, has a secret tunnel entrance and, of course, has spaceships being kept deep inside. Oliver was not the only white post-colonial writer to extol the spiritual significance of Mount Shasta. His writings were founded on ideas pioneered by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, famed occultist and founder of the Theosophical Society. Blavatsky wrote in her work about the existence of an imagined missing link continent that sank when Pangaea broke. She called this sunken continent that formerly connected the Pacific and Indian Oceans Lemuria, and created a complex web of theories around it referencing Eastern religious texts and other esoteric traditions. She claimed Lemuria was the original home of an advanced civilization that possessed extraordinary psychic powers and spiritual awareness. According to believers, these Lemurians came to live inside Mount Shasta in a series of tunnels beneath the mountain when their world went under. Sightings of these Lemurians, or residents of Inner Shasta, are referenced in many places. Frederick Oliver said in his work that locals would sometimes see residents of the mountain's inner sanctum wandering outside in white robes. But the first article linking Lemurians to Mount Shasta is usually thought to be one written in 1925 by a writer named Selvius. This article and writer are referenced a bunch in the many pieces out there about Lemurians and Mount Shasta, but I wanted to know more about this Selvius. I mean, he or she was out there publishing under just one name, like Madonna or Prince or Liberace, which seemed like a flex for the time, so I was curious. Unfortunately, I couldn't find much else about this person aside from the often repeated claim that they wrote the first article about Lemurians in Mount Shasta. So, do with that what you will. And then, in 1931, someone going by the name Wishar Spennel Serve, which was theorized to be the pseudonym of Harvey Spencer Lewis, an American writer, mystic, and founder of a Rosicrucian organization, wrote and published Lemuria, the Lost Continent of the Pacific, the Mystery People of Mount Shasta, in which he wrote that Lemurians were, quote, tall, graceful, and agile, with larger heads and much larger foreheads than average humans. Lemurians would come to town and spend gold nuggets, end quote. I also found some unfounded speculation online, quoted in a piece on treasure.net saying, quote, it appears from the similarity of material that Selvius and Serve were one and the same person, end quote. So, do with that what you will. The 2006 book Weird California by Greg Bishop, Joe Osterley, and Mike Marinacci tells a story about British prospector J.C. Brown, who said that when he was hired by the Lord Cowdray Mining Company of England to prospect for gold in 1904, he entered a cave 11 miles deep into the mountain where he found what he described as an underground village filled with gold, shields, and mummies. He told this story 30 years later to a man named John C. Root, who felt the three-decade-old information was solid enough to make him gather together an exploration team of about 80 people to go and find this underground wonder city of gold. In a turn of events that should have surprised no one, on the day the team was to set out, Brown did not show up and he was not heard from again. Old J.C. Brown up and disappeared. I'm sure it was aliens and not a dude who made up an outlandish story about a job he did 30 years earlier, peacing out. But, skeptical though I may be, stranger, witness accounts of and belief in Lemurian activity on Mount Shasta have been incorporated into numerous occult religions over the decades, including the I Am movement. The I Am movement was a neo-theosophical religious movement founded in the early 1930s by Guy Ballard and his wife Edna Ann Wheeler Ballard, which had over 1 million followers at one point. The movement contained elements of the New Thought movement of the time, which was the precursor to the New Age movement that is alive and well and living in the Department of Health today. You know, the whole magnets and sunshine approach to wellness. The Ballards also included a nationalistic bent to their teachings and ideas, claiming a new golden age would emerge in the United States. They borrowed from American fascist activist, journalist, writer, and occultist William Dudley Pelley, who was known for his support of Adolf Hitler in the creation of their ideology. Pelley, by the way, who published an article for his own paper, Liberation, on November 7, 1938, titled German Jews Get What They Asked For, in which he said Jewish leaders brought Kristallnacht on themselves. Pelley, whose goal, according to the Smithsonian, quote, was to eventually take power and implement a plan he called Christian Economics in the United States, a scheme he claimed was neither communist, fascist, or capitalist, in which all property was owned by the state and where white citizens received shares based on their loyalty that guaranteed an income. African Americans would be re-enslaved and Jews would be excluded from the nation, end quote. Pelley, who, according to the website BoundaryStones.com, was, quote, consumed by anti-Semitic paranoia. He alleged that American calamities like the Civil War and the Great Depression could be attributed to vast Jewish conspiracies and that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was secretly a Sephardic Jew plotting to destroy America, end quote. So, a real great guy. Do you think this is it, stranger? Are we living in the new golden age the Ballards hoped for? Oy, save me from the hopes and dreams of rich white spiritualists who believe in eugenics. Anyway, the I Am movement operated on the belief that a hierarchy of supernatural beings, including Jesus Christ, among others, live in a succession of reincarnated physical bodies in and around Mount Shasta. According to Los Angeles Magazine, Ballard thought he was the re-embodiment of George Washington, an Egyptian priest, and a noted French musician. Edna believed she was the second coming of Elizabeth I and Joan of Arc. Sure, me too, girl. Why not? How come people never discover past lives of, like, a bus driver or a sweaty grocery store clerk or a school lunch lady, you know? Anyway, Ballard died in 1939, and in 1942, Edna and their son, along with some other employees, were twice convicted of mail fraud for attempting to trick mail recipients into joining a religion that was known to be false. I mean, how you can argue that one religion is false and the other isn't, I don't know. The conviction was later overturned in a landmark Supreme Court decision, which ruled that the question of the truth of religious beliefs should not have been submitted to a jury. So, maybe they were protected by special spiritual sauce? I don't know. The I Am movement gave birth to plenty of other crackpot religions and spiritual movements in the years that followed, all of which held Mount Shasta as a pivotal sacred place, and all of which claimed to have eyewitness accounts of Lemurians, or ascended masters, inside and around the mountain. It is interesting that all of these witness accounts happened right after various books detailing Lemuria in Mount Shasta were published. And with the publication of so many such texts over half a century or so came a steady stream of writers, spiritualists, and tourists making pilgrimages to Mount Shasta. The eyewitness accounts of strange dwellers on Mount Shasta are not limited to the accounts of white spiritualists, though. Indigenous traditions of the peoples around Mount Shasta also speak of mysterious beings on the mountain. The Modoc use the term Mata Kagmi, meaning keepers of the woods, to describe the Bigfoot-type creatures they believe live there. Modoc storyteller Taylor Tupper, who leaves offerings when visiting the mountain, says in a piece on Atlas Obscura, quote, "Bigfoot have been in existence as long as our people have. We'd be silly to think that we're the only ones here in this vast universe," end quote. I mean, not believing in Bigfoot doesn't automatically mean believing we're the only ones here in this vast universe. You can not believe in Bigfoot while also believing in aliens, but okay. Strangers, if you're looking for a fall wardrobe refresh, you have to check out Quince. Quince has everything from down coats to Mongolian and alpaca wool sweaters and even cashmere t-shirts. That's right, cashmere t-shirts. You know I'm obsessed with the Mongolian cashmere crew neck sweater. I have almost every color now. They're lightweight, but they keep me warm on those crisp fall days and nights. Plus, they pair really well with the oversized blazer. Listen, you can get cheaper clothes, but not at this quality. If you don't want to have to keep buying stuff when your cheap stuff falls apart or starts looking ratty and pilly, get yourself some fall staples from Quince. It's luxury without the price tag. Plus, they partner with ethical textile manufacturers to make sure people are paid a living wage and the materials are sustainable. Find your fall staples at Quince. Go to quince.com/strange for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/strange to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/strange.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The region is considered prime Bigfoot territory. In 1976, large ape-like footprints were reportedly found near Castle Crags just west of the mountain, prompting early interest from researchers exploring the creature's presence in Northern California. Over the years, anecdotal reports of Bigfoot have continued. One entry in the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization database details a 2001 afternoon sighting outside Dunsmuir, where a witness allegedly saw a roughly 7.5-foot-tall, dark-haired creature squatting in a creek bed, presumably fishing. The creature, the witness said, suddenly sprang away with a series of bounding leaps when it realized it had been seen. Another sighting from 2012 recounts a driver traveling near Eureka, California, about 37 miles northwest of Mount Shasta. The report is published on the Bigfoot Researchers Foundation website and describes how the witness was driving along the mountain roads at night when they allegedly spotted Bigfoot. They describe the moment as follows, quote, "I had to dim my headlights again, and as we just passed 8 Mile Bridge, I figured that I should hit the brights as we went around a very slight curve. I hit the brights. At that same moment, a large rock stood up. It looked at us. It was a light gray color and had long, shaggy hair. It had big eyes that looked yellow," end quote. The witness says the creature followed the car and, quote, "when it stood up, my mind went blank and I took my foot off the accelerator. We had a very good long look at him, maybe about 15 to 20 seconds. It felt like forever. The Jeep's headlights were on him the whole time. He seemed very startled, like we spooked him. To me, it looked like he was trying to blend in with the surrounding mountainside. I had 4 of my children with me, and 3 of them had seen him. When I came back to my senses, I screamed, so did everyone else, and hit the gas and got out of there quickly. We drove to the rest area, and I had to get out of the car to breathe and stop shaking. We all had to calm down," end quote. Could you imagine being the one of the 4 kids who didn't see the Bigfoot? What a ripoff. The BFRO.net website catalogs many Bigfoot sightings, such as this one. They are all personal eyewitness accounts and are really not verifiable, but suffice to say, the presence of Bigfoot in the region is a prominent one. Beyond Bigfoot, Shasta's forests and slopes are said to host other ethereal spirit beings too. The gold miner, writer, and poet Joaquin Miller, dubbed the Poet of the Sierras, wrote about Mount Shasta and the Wintu spiritual landscape in the 1870s. And his descriptions of mysterious spirits moving through Shasta's wilderness evoke that same poetic sensibility rooted in indigenous elemental lore. In his book Life Amongst the Modocs, he included this passage, quote, "Often I climb the highest mountain, looking away toward Mount Shasta to the north. Somebody was waiting up there, I knew. I knew that 2 dark eyes were peering through the dense wood toward the south. 2 soft brown hands parting the green foliage, looking out the way that I should come at last. End quote. Wintu lore includes a spirit said to dwell within Mount Shasta. This being is known to the Wintu as Mis Misa. Wintu elder and storyteller Daryl Babe Wilson explains it in News from Native California, quote, Mis Misa is the tiny yet powerful spirit that lives within Akuyet, Mount Shasta, and balances the earth within the universe and the universe within the earth. Its assigned duty makes Akuyet the most necessary of all the mountains upon earth. Mis Misa keeps the earth the proper distance from the sun and keeps everything in its proper place when wonder and power stir the universe. End quote. So reports of strange or otherworldly beings in the area abound, and much of that local lore tells of tall, robed strangers that echo the descriptions of Lemurians. These people were said to appear in town to trade and would buy large quantities of sulfur and salt and pay with chunks of gold and then would vanish before shopkeepers could give them change. In one famous anecdote, spiritual tour guide Ashlyn told NPR's All Things Considered, quote, they were 7 feet tall, dressed in long white robes. They went to the general store in town, paid with chunks of gold, and never said a word, end quote. Such stories, though unverified, have become part of Mount Shasta's living mythos. Mount Shasta's mystique is also a contested spiritual landscape where the spiritual pursuits of modern-day New Agers clash with the long-held traditions of indigenous people. This conflict is highlighted by the quiet battle over Panther Meadows, a high-elevation alpine field revered by both modern pilgrims and the Winneman Wintu of Northern California. The 2001 documentary Mount Shasta explores this tension through the lens of Florence Jones, the 88-year-old spiritual leader of the Winneman Wintu, and her community's efforts to preserve the sacred meadow and its spring. The Wintu see the mountain not just as a landscape, but as a living being, a source of healing and renewal for all forms of life, humans, animals, plants, and the earth itself. Meanwhile, each summer, New Age practitioners gather in Panther Meadows for chanting, drumming, dancing, and crystal work. I'm imagining a lot of women wearing clothes with bell sleeves from the Pyramid Collection and white men with dreadlocks. Kind of a mini Burning Man situation. The Winneman Wintu understandably have concerns about behaviors that violate their own spiritual protocols, such as dancing naked in spiritual spaces, leaving crystals in the spring, and most of all, physically damaging the terrain by collapsing the spring's protective rock walls. These actions are, to the Wintu, a desecration of their holy site. Because white people just have to make it weird. And compounding the spiritual disruption is the threat of commercial development. A proposed multi-million dollar ski resort would bring ski runs directly through Panther Meadows, endangering the ecology and the sanctity of the site. The Winneman Wintu have opposed this plan for decades, framing their resistance as both environmental and religious activism. Across the United States, land-based spiritual practices are rarely afforded the same legal or cultural protections as church-based religions. Sacred places like Panther Meadows, akin to natural cathedrals, are increasingly threatened, not just by mining and developing, but also by spiritual tourism and ignorance. The documentary suggests, quote, religious freedom is not guaranteed to those whose altars are mountains and rivers, end quote. I guess not even post-Indigenous settler interest in the region can save it from America's first and most important religion, capitalism. Strangers, life is crazy right now, and that's putting it politely. It's getting harder and harder to be awake and paying attention. If you're looking for a natural way to ease some of the stress and calm down a little, I highly recommend CBD gummies from Cornbread Hemp. You know when you're trying to fall asleep and you realize that not only is your jaw clenched, but your entire body is clenched? CBD gummies from Cornbread Hemp help unclench your body and your mind so you can relax and maybe get some more of that sleep everyone's saying we need more of. Cornbread Hemp uses only the best part of the hemp plant, the flower, for the purest and most potent CBD. And all products are third-party lab tested and USDA organic to ensure safety and purity. They're formulated to help relieve discomfort, stress, and sleeplessness. I love Cornbread Hemp CBD gummies, and I think you will too. And right now, Strange and Unexplained listeners can save 30% on their first order. Just head to cornbreadhemp.com/strange and use code STRANGE at checkout. That's cornbreadhemp.com/strange and use code STRANGE. In addition to Mount Shasta's deep indigenous significance and its New Age spiritual appeal, the mountain is also, as I mentioned earlier, often cited as a UFO hotspot. Beginning in the 1950s, amid the flying saucer craze, reported sightings around Shasta increased and have persisted into the present. This may be in part because of some unusual atmospheric optics, like the lenticular clouds that form over the peak of the mountain. These smooth, layered cloud formations look strikingly like hovering disks, and many UFO reports have ultimately turned out to be misidentified lenticular clouds. Locals like to joke that the large lenticulars are Lemurian motherships cloaking themselves as clouds. But for some folks, it isn't a joke. Some take this claim very seriously. In February 2020, a glowing saucer-shaped object was photographed near Mount Shasta. It was posted online and caused quite a stir until the U.S. Forest Service tried to set the record straight, saying it was not a flying saucer, but just an especially vivid lenticular cloud lit up by the sunset. But not all sightings are so easily explained. In 2008, five witnesses in the town of McLeod on Shasta's southern flank reported seeing a jellyfish-like craft hovering silently above the trees, with what looked like fiery internal lights. A piece in the Los Angeles Times reported, quote, "I really don't believe in flying saucers," admitted one longtime local, "but I do know that something weird was happening," end quote. Encounters like this with strange lights or what appear to be spacecraft maneuvering around the mountain are regularly recounted by residents of the area. Some ufologists and conspiracy theorists have proposed that there is an extraterrestrial base hidden within Mount Shasta, overlapping with the legends of the Lemurian city inside the mountain. In his book Underground Bases and Tunnels, What is the Government Trying to Hide?, researcher Richard Souder identifies Mount Shasta as a probable site of both alien and covert military activity. He describes an interview with a local person on the topic saying, quote, "In the preliminary stages of my research in the early 1990s, I had no informed idea of how deep below the surface underground bases could reach. By chance, I had gone to hear a public talk by a man I did not know on a topic that had nothing whatsoever to do with underground bases. However, during the talk, he unexpectedly made an offhand comment that caused me to think that he knew something about secret underground facilities. A few days later, I telephoned him and asked if I could come by his office to speak with him. He consented to give me a little of his time, so I went by and asked him some questions, including about a specific location where I believed there was a secret underground base. He verified that there was a base there and told me that it was 1 mile deep. At the time, that seemed improbably deep to me. I now understand, however, that it is well within the state of the art of the underground excavation and construction industries to build facilities 1 mile deep. In fact, facilities can be even deeper than that. Other information that has since been given to me has raised the question of facilities possibly as deep as 12 to 14 miles. Frankly, I do not know what the technological limits are in the super secret black budget realm of compartmentalized programs," end quote. It's hard to see Souder's research as scientifically sound or as having any real evidence to back it, but it is another example of the UFO inside the mountain conversation persisting past casual conversational belief and becoming part of a discussion that vies for more widespread legitimacy. Mount Shasta also features prominently in UFO conspiracy maps and esoteric travel guides. In the book Modern Esoteric: Beyond Our Senses, author Brad Olson refers to the mountain as a key access point to Hollow Earth and describes it as a dimensional gateway situated at a major intersection of global ley lines by way of explaining its attraction to both extraterrestrial visitors and spiritually advanced civilizations like the Lemurians. Mount Shasta's UFO lore does overlap quite a bit with tales of extraterrestrial beings and multidimensional entities said to inhabit or guard the mountain. The most enduring are the Lemurians or Bigfoot stories, but tales also circulate about lizard people living in the mountain's tunnels and lava tubes. These beings are typically described as tall, scaly, and telepathic, which is also how I described my high school guidance counselor, who always seemed to know when I was smoking in the bathroom. According to Atlas Obscura, quote, "One theory holds that ancient Lemurians share the mountain's depths with a race of reptilian beings, sometimes referred to as lizard people, who are either working in secret alliance or bitter opposition," end quote. I can't even begin to get into all the thinly veiled white supremacy behind both the Lemurians and the lizard people. I haven't said this in a long time, but it feels like the right opportunity to bring it back. In the words of Saeed on Lost, I don't have time to explain that now. The result of all this mythical intersection is a kind of metaphysical mashup, making Shasta home to not just one mythical race, but making it an alien convergence zone. Atlas Obscura says, quote, "Mount Shasta is a who's who of metaphysics, a magnet for mystics, channelers, alien believers, and Hollow Earth theorists. Many of these seekers speak of interdimensional portals or doorways on the mountain, places where the veil between realities thins," end quote. In Telos, The Call Goes Out by Diane Robbins, the author relays channeled messages from a Lemurian named Adama, who claims, quote, "I am Adama, and I greet you from the subterranean city of Telos, located beneath Mount Shasta in California, where our Lemurian colony currently dwells. We have created a civilization of peace and abundance, with no sickness, aging, or death. Greetings from Telos. I am Adama, ascended master and high priest of Telos. I am dictating this message to you from my home beneath the earth, where over 1.5 million of us live in perpetual peace and prosperity," end quote. Okay, hi, Adama. Thanks for the postcard. But far-fetched as Adama's dispatch may seem, even locals with no spiritual agenda report strange phenomena in the area, like lights in the sky, eerie sounds in the forest, or a hum beneath the earth. Quote, "You hear things in the night that don't belong to any known creature," end quote, says one resident on NPR's All Things Considered episode. Quote, "People go up that mountain and come back different," end quote. If they come back at all. Mount Shasta has developed a reputation for mysterious disappearances and time anomalies. There are a good many cases in which people have simply vanished without a trace, or where they have reported bizarre lapses in memory or perception. One such case occurred in 2011 near McLeod Falls, a popular campground just south of Mount Shasta. ActiveNorCal.com tells the story of a family that went camping near the river whose 3-year-old son suddenly vanished. The boy was playing just a few feet from the adults when suddenly he was gone. Search teams were called in and scoured the forest for the boy, and he was finally found around midnight, hiding in a bush not far from where he disappeared. Unharmed, though slightly disoriented. At first, the family assumed the child had simply wandered off, but in the weeks that followed, his grandmother noticed he had become distant and oddly quiet. Then one day, he startled her by saying, "I don't like my other grandma." When she asked him what he meant, he told her that a woman who looked just like grandma had taken him into a cave beneath the mountain. According to a video on YouTube, the boy said, quote, "She was really a robot. Her eyes glowed and she had wires inside. She made me lay down and looked at my stomach. Then she said I came from the stars. She said I was put inside my mom," end quote. He also apparently described the cave in unsettling detail, saying it was full of dusty purses, guns, and human bones, as if others had been there before him. Eventually, this other grandma led him to the bush where he was found and told him to stay put until someone came. The real grandmother shared the story online, where it quickly caught the attention of paranormal communities. Many interpreted the encounter as an abduction by a shape-shifting entity, possibly a Lemurian, alien, or interdimensional being, using a familiar form to gain the child's trust. The cave full of purses and bones even led some to wonder if this was connected to other disappearances around the mountain. I mean, okay, there is a lot to unpack here. First of all, when the family assumed the child had wandered off, they were probably right. I'm sorry, I am not buying this "my kid disappeared when I was right there the whole time" thing. You were on a camping trip, you were enjoying 5 minutes of peace, when your kid was peacefully absorbed in something and you were ignoring him. You turned around and realized he was gone and you were like, oh fuck. He probably fell asleep in the bush where you found him. I don't know, but Occam's razor, am I right? Like, why would we go with the most implausible story about lost time when it seems very plausible indeed that your kid just got lost in the woods? And then we have the electric grandmother over here luring the kid into a deep mountain lab to prod him. And we're saying it was a shapeshifter? Well, then why would a shapeshifter shift into a robot form of an old lady? That makes zero sense. And if these beings are so advanced, why is their underground lab so dusty and full of old bones? Jeez, don't these Lemurians have standards? Don't the Guardians of the Flame or whatever have cleaning people? And if I am this kid's grandma and he tells me this story, I am getting on the horn to a child therapist pronto to help him deal with what might be some light PTSD after getting lost on a mountain all night? I'm not going to take to Reddit and post the tale to, what, garner interest? Warn others about the robot version of me wandering Shasta campgrounds? I don't know, stranger. It all sounds like a lot of hooey to me. And yes, I did mention good old Reddit, where the story has been folded into the canon of a body of work compiled by pseudoscientist David Politis, which documents strange disappearances in wilderness areas that defy typical search and rescue logic. Another uncanny vanishing that people like to cite to add to Mount Shasta's reputation for strange and otherworldly is the case of 21-year-old Lesner Noe Velasquez Cardenas, who disappeared in late May 2025. According to reporting by SFGate, the trail begins with a car crash on a rural stretch outside Redding, after which Cardenas reportedly, quote, contacted the California Highway Patrol, but left the scene before officers arrived, end quote. Then, just hours later, Cardenas was seen entering a taxi near town, telling the driver he was trying to beat a friend's time to complete a hike, end quote. And then he just kind of vanished. Cardenas was said to be carrying backpacking gear, and he disappeared shortly after being dropped off at the Avalanche Gulch trailhead. Climbing ranger Nick Myers, who has overseen countless rescues on Mount Shasta, told SFGate, quote, there's some weird things about the whole story, you know, from start to finish, end quote. And Redding Police Sergeant Josiah Farron said of the case, quote, it's very unusual circumstances. It doesn't really compare to any case that I've worked in the 20 years that I've been in law enforcement, end quote. The strangeness of the case that these two men are referring to seem to be inconsistencies in the facts around Cardenas' disappearance. Authorities know that his phone pinged near the base of Mount Shasta at 2:06 p.m., 16 minutes before he was reportedly dropped off at the mountain trailhead. They know his wallet and cash were later discovered at a friend's home, but no other trace, no gear, no communications, no sightings, has ever surfaced. The evidence runs dry there. Yeah, okay, that sounds weird, I guess, but I've written enough episodes of Strange and Unexplained to know that a dearth of evidence and baffling disappearance cases are not as rare as one might think. Cardenas remains missing, and that is deeply unfortunate for him and for those who knew and loved him. But his unsolved case and the lack of facts around it does not a supernatural conspiracy make. Skepticism aside, though, it is clear that Mount Shasta attracts a wide array of legends and continues to be a hotbed of mystery and mysticism. A form of geomythology appears to be at work here. Humans have always attached myths to striking natural features as a way to personify and understand them. It is one of the ways we learn to understand the wild world we live in. Mount Shasta is relatively remote and hosts a pretty small population, which might go some way towards explaining how legends are able to grow there without quick or easy debunking. In the late 1800s, as California was being rapidly settled and industrialized, Shasta's wild solitude stood out, a last frontier where the mystical West could still live on in stories. The timing of the Lemurian legend's rise coincided with widespread fascination with occultism in Shasta, with all its uncharted grandeur. Perhaps science hasn't found an ancient city or interdimensional portal in Mount Shasta to prove true the stories told about the area by so many different cultures. But it doesn't matter. The enduring appeal of the unknown keeps these theories alive. People believe because they want to believe. The mountain's mystique thrives on the very lack of concrete answers. The more mysterious, the better. Because the only thing we love more than having all the answers is something that, in spite of all our scrutiny, remains strange and unexplained. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. In the 1700s, a poor, uneducated woman found herself engaged in an extremely bizarre and, quite frankly, grisly affair. By the end, Mary Toft and her rabbit babies would be front page news, bring shame to very prominent doctors, and usher in some much needed change to the world of obstetric medicine. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by Eve Kerrigan and me, Daisy Egan, with research by Becky Berger, sound engineering by Jeff Devine, music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on a bigger network. Who knows? Maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'll wonder if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and Grab Bag Collab. Or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. Stay strange.